was singing. Right. Now, they have printed off a few verses for you to stay with in the bulletin. But if you have a Bible in the pew in front of you, or if you have your own Bible there, you can open up to those scriptures. Because as I teach, for those of you who don't know, I teach Bible classes for high school students in Syracuse. And I always tell them, you can't just look at what the preacher preaches. You have to look at the context. You can't look at just what the teacher teaches. You have to look at the context. And I will say the word context, 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 to where they hate that word now. But they'll never forget it. Okay? So you can feel free just to look at the scriptures there. But please also, if you can, open up your Bible. You can go ahead and open up to Matthew 7. If you'd like, get ahead of me there. Or you can eventually find it as I tell a story. Sue, Nico's not the only storyteller in our family. He gets it from me, right, buddy? But I'm going to tell you a story about my grandfather. My grandparents, what they like to do, or what they used to like to do, is plant trees every time a grandchild was born in our family. And so when I was born, they planted a tree for me. When my sisters were born before me, they have their own trees, and they would mark it, and we would have the responsibility of coming to take care of those trees, either fertilize them, water them, or whatever it was. And it was kind of a fun thing, because each of us had name tags on them, right? And mine survived longer than my sister's. They might have gotten diseases. I didn't do it, okay? I will still stand in it. I didn't do it. But mine lasted longer than my sister's. But after grandchildren stopped being born in our family, my grandpa decided to do something else. And he wanted to still have more trees. He loved to have trees in his backyard. But I can't go that far, can I? Am I going too far? Is it that thing? He liked to... I'll stay back. But he wanted to have more trees. And he wanted to have apple trees. And so he gets online, right? And I surprise people by telling them my grandpa goes online. My other grandpa, by the way, still doesn't, right? His kids created a Facebook page for him, but I don't know if he's ever been on there. He still types his church bulletins every Saturday on a typewriter and copies them off. I think in one of those machines that goes like this, right? But my other grandfather that loves to plant trees, he was in the Air Force Intelligence during the Korean conflict, and so computers are like just an extension of his hands, and so he's very familiar with this. But he gets online and orders six apple trees, right? And he orders these six apple trees. The saplings they'll be sent to his house, and he will plant them there, and they will grow and produce apples. And he's excited about this, right? Well, he gets these six trees to his house, and he plants them. He puts them in the ground, and he, of course, puts them in a kind of this triangular shape with the three on each side leading into this garden that had been planted and different things. It was pretty. It was beautiful, right? It was going to grow up to be this beautiful little walkway into the garden. Now, we know that these saplings don't produce fruit right off the bat, right? It's not like you plant them and you get this. It's not like going to Wegmans or to, what is it? Khalil's? Yeah, Khalil's over here, yeah. It's not like going to the grocery store and getting fruit right away. You have to wait. You have to be patient. So he waits for one more year, and they don't produce any fruit. He's like, okay, right? He waits another year, and four of the trees begin to produce apples. He sees them begin to produce there, and so he gets kind of excited. Of course, there are two still, and they happen to be on, like, symmetrical. These two trees do not produce, and they're symmetrical with each other. So it's like two, two, and then these two that don't produce anything. And he's like, well, I'm not really sure what's going on, right? So he gives, well, we'll just give it another year. So he gives it another year. The four apples continue to, or four trees continue to grow apples, and then these two trees continue not to. And he's a little baffled, but by this time he's taking proactive action, and he says, well, I'm going to make sure that I take care of these. I'm going to fertilize them. I'm going to water them. I'm not going to kill any bees that are around. I want to make sure these things get pollinated. I remember any time we came over, right, we could not kill bees. So you saw a bunch of grandchildren running around the yard because they couldn't kill the bees, right? They were just running from all these bees going around. It's like, Grandpa said, don't kill them. Grandpa said, to this day, I still hesitate if I see a bee. I still hesitate before I swat. I still kill it, but I just hesitate a little bit. But that's how it was. He taught us to do this. And so we would try to take care of these trees. Another year still went by and nothing. Right, and so he's almost given up hope until the next year. And the next year, these four apple trees that were here had these two little friends that began to produce a little bit of fruit, right? And as this fruit is growing, he's realizing it looks a little different, right? It actually, as it grows out, it grows similar to that, but it grows out a little bit bigger and bigger, and eventually he realizes it's not the shape of an apple, it's the shape of a pear. They had sent him 4 apple trees and 2 pear trees, right? Luckily, he planted them symmetrical from one another without knowing it, and so he just left it, right? But he had two trees that were totally different than the other ones. And so what my grandpa learned is that you don't necessarily know the character of the tree until it produces fruit, right? You don't know the character of what it is until it produces something, okay? And today, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about how the character of what is inside is what produces what comes outside, but sometimes we don't know everything that's on the inside until we see what's produced on the outside, right? And it's not just with trees that we do this, right? We know this isn't just with trees. This is with situations in our lives. We talk about how I need to draw a tape line here. Let's just leave this here, okay? I'm feeding back a lot. I apologize. Now, what we do with situations here in our lives, we know that sometimes we don't know what's going to happen with a situation or with a lot of things until something is produced from it, right? We don't word it like that. We're not weird like that. What we do is we say, once we get a job, we say, well, I'm just going to feel things out to see if it works out, right? Or, you know, we get into, like when we were younger, we're thinking about the college or the school that we were going to or what we were going to get into. And when we get into that, we still are unsure. We could study and say, well, I know this school is affordable. I know this one has the best teachers. I know this has the only program that I want to go into. And we can say that about it and do all this studying, but there's still that uncertainty in there that we won't see if it works out until afterward. Until afterward, we'll say, well, you know, I think that those things went well. Or we'll see what comes of it, and we'll say, yeah, I don't think that was the best decision in my life, right? And we don't know that until something is produced. But it's not just with situations like that, right? Or jobs or things like that. It's in our relationships with one another, right? Our relationships, our friendships that we have, we don't know exactly if this is going to be a good relationship with somebody else until something good comes out of it, right? And that's how we will base our relationships. We'll say, well, you know, they're a good friend. They help out. There's a lot of, you know, they really bring this out in me, right? Or you bring this out in another person. It seems that is a very, we would call it, perhaps a fruitful relationship, right? Something good is produced. Sometimes we get in these relationships with people, and it's nothing but bad things, right? On both sides. And no good comes out of it, and so we kind of sever ties, and we move on, okay? So we see situations, we see relationships, but of course we know we also even sometimes do this with Jesus, right? We take our relationship with Jesus and we will look at how we relate to him or what he is producing in our lives, and we'll think, you know, there's not much good coming out of this. And so we will be like, is this really what I believe? Is this really a good thing? Is there any good coming out of this? And we'll ask ourselves these questions, right? But Jesus also asked the same thing of us, right? He'll look at us and he will say, what is being produced? And then we can look at this and say, is Jesus truly Lord of our hearts? Is he really in control of things in there? Is there really a character change in me? Because there will be a difference in the fruit that is produced outside of me, right? And Jesus uses this metaphor a lot, such as in Matthew 7, where some of you perhaps have turned. Okay? And in Matthew 7, this is at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. I'm going to come to the context of the Sermon on the Mount in a little bit. But what we see here is that it's toward the end of the sermon. He's kind of wrapping things up here. And the Sermon on the Mount is probably one of the most famous sermons inside, of course, Christianity, but outside as well. Right? There are people that respect even Jesus' teachings within these 3 chapters that don't really respect Christians or Christianity altogether. But these words of Jesus, they'll really say he has some good things to say. But as he's wrapping up his sermon here at the end, he gives a few different metaphors, and Jesus is good at this, right? He gives these different metaphors. He talks about a wide path and a narrow one. He talks about a wise and a foolish builder, which we like to sing that song. But right in the middle there, he talks about a tree. He talks about these false teachers in there. So I'm going to go ahead and read, starting in verse 15, and I'm not sure, let's see, this starts in verse 17. So you'll catch up there in your bulletin, but I'm going to start from 15, of course, to give a little bit of context. It says, beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then you will know them by their fruits. So here we see that Jesus gives this metaphor, is that you will know if somebody is good or bad, if they're a good teacher or a bad teacher, by the fruit that is produced, right? Not by whether they say things that make sense, right? Not whether they say things that make you feel good even, but what is produced from what they teach. And that metaphor of the good and the bad fruit, what I love about how Jesus teaches this, okay? And if you have this bulletin right here, what I want you to do is I want you to circle the words good tree and good fruit, and I want you to circle the words bad tree and bad fruit. Now, I'm gonna talk about some Bible nerd stuff here in a minute, some language things, some words that Jesus uses, and I don't want you to turn your brain off when I do this, because that's what my students do, and I'm used to that, but I'm going to ask you not to do that. You two either, right there in the front. I see you guys, yeah, right. But it's because what it'll do is it'll help us understand what more of what Jesus is talking about, okay? Now, because the word that he uses when he says bad tree, okay, when that word bad is not the same word that he uses when he says bad fruit, okay? And the word that he uses for good when he talks about a good tree is not the same word that he uses for good when he says good fruit, okay? For us, we use the word good all the time. It's like a blanket. It's like, that's good. That smells good. That tastes good, right? That sounds good. I'm good with that. I feel good. Man, you're good, right? You're a good boy. And all of those times, it means something slightly different, right? And it's the same way with bad, right? Man, that was bad. That was pretty bad. You're bad. You're so bad, you're good, right? That we talk about. We use the words just because we don't have anything else to say. We say, for lack of a better term, bad, right? And it's just a blanket statement here. But Jesus uses the words very intentionally, because when he talks about a bad tree, the word he uses for bad is a word that means corrupted, okay? It's a word that means bad from the very inside of what it is, okay? Or rotten, you could say. Much like the diseased trees that my sisters had at my grandparents' house, right? From the very inside out, it is corrupted. And what does that corrupted tree produce? Bad fruit. Not necessarily bad from the inside out, but even from the outside in. It is dishonorable fruit. It's ugly fruit is what it is. It's nothing that you would be proud of. It's the stuff that when you're over at the grocery store and you're looking through apples, you're like, that one's got a bruise on it, right? And you pass that one by. You would never buy that because you want the perfect fruit. And so, but these bad trees, these corrupted trees, only produce bad or ugly fruit. Now, the word good he uses here is a word that means upright or honorable when he talks about the trees. And these are trees that are good from the inside out to the very core of who these trees are. They are good trees. And they only produce beautiful fruit, honorable fruit, fruit that you would put on a pedestal, that you would put in a basket in the middle of your table and you would let everyone see when they came and sat down, right? You can't eat it. Not yet, right? Can't eat it. You got to look at it for a while because it's beautiful fruit. And look how all the colors go together, right? And that is the fruit that these good trees, these upright trees, these honorable trees produce, right? So we have these corrupted trees producing ugly fruit, and we have these upright trees producing beautiful fruit. And that is, this metaphor, I think, gives us insight not only into these false teachers versus good teachers, but it gives us the whole context of what Jesus is talking about in the Sermon on the Mount. Right? From the very beginning of chapter 5 all the way through the end of chapter 7, right? And what I see Jesus talking about is character. Excuse me. Inside character, whether it is corrupted or it is upright and it is honorable. From the very beginning, he's talking about from the inside out. But what we tend to do with the Sermon on the Mount, what we tend to do when we look at even the Beatitudes, okay? Or we look at things later on in chapter 5 when he talks about the Old Testament versus the New Testament. What we tend to do is take what Jesus said and we just make new rules out of it. We make new outside actions that do very little to affect our character. We may use the language of character, talking about hate, right, or pride. We may use character words, But in all actuality, we just make more surface rules around the outside, right? And what we see, what we need to look at, if you have your Bibles, you can flip back to chapter 5, and we look at how Jesus begins his sermon by saying, "Blessed are the poor in the spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Or blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied." And when we read those, sometimes we even read those, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, because they will inherit the," right? Or, "Blessed are the those who hunger and thirst, because they will be satisfied." And so what we look here is that we see these as you must do this in order to get this. We must be poor in spirit in order to inherit the kingdom of heaven. We must, as he says, be meek or gentle if we want to inherit the earth. But the blessings of Jesus don't go by anything that we do, anything that we change on the outside. The blessing of Jesus is regardless. It just happens that some of us tend to be poor in spirit. Some of us are meek and we have that character, right? And we have that hunger and that thirst inside of us. And Jesus says, you will be filled, not by what you do, but because you are hungry. I'm going to give this to you. And so what we see is it's not prescriptive. It's not, he's not prescribing new rules, right? If you like rules, there's about 600 in the Old Testament. You can pick one, right? If you like rules. But Jesus knows that we don't really like rules. That's why he brings this teaching about character in. We don't like rules. And the reason that we don't like rules is because we stay on the surface with rules, right? We stay right on the surface. And this goes back to when my mom told me not to run in church, right? Which I told my boys to not do this morning, right? But for me, I didn't understand why, right? I just thought my mom was being mom. She's being mean mom, right? I can't run. I can't have fun in church. What are you talking about, right? So I ran in church. And I have a scar to prove it, right? Yeah. And actually, on a less happy note, I have a young story of me running in church when I was probably 4 or 5. We met in my uncle's house, which was a larger house, but it kind of went in a big circle. And they had set up a table over here with one of those big coffee urns on it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. And there was a little boy named Willie that was chasing me around the church. And I didn't do anything to stop him from chasing me around the church because it was the game we were playing. We're running around, running, running, running. Well, I made it underneath the table. Willie didn't. Actually ran into the table and spilled this entire coffee, some on himself. I remember the ambulance coming to take this young poor boy away, right? And so we get in a story like that, we get a little more insight into why we don't run in church. And so for those reasons, right, because God, what he did in the Old Testament is he gave us a bunch of rules. Right, he gave us all these rules. There are 613 listed, if you ask these Jewish rabbis, between Exodus 20 and the end of the book of Deuteronomy. 613, right? And so we could go through there and we can pick out those rules and we can follow all those rules. Right? But the problem was with the people then is that they stayed on the surface of what those rules were. They did this, they didn't do that, right? They followed this, they didn't follow that. And what happens is that stayed on the surface because that's what we do with rules. We don't care to know why. We just want to complain. And that's what they did, is that some of them followed those rules and they stayed right there on the surface. And they got mad at anybody that didn't. They, in fact, what they would do is that they would build a hedge around some of these laws and they would make their own rules around the law so you couldn't even get close to breaking that law. We call those Pharisees. The word Pharisee literally means to build a hedge, to build a line around something. And so they would build these rules or these traditions around these laws so that you couldn't even come in close to it. But it was still even more on the outside surface, getting nowhere into the inner character or the inner heart of the issue, right? It's like God tried to work from the outside in with his people. And it didn't work because, not because God can't work, it's because we don't like to let things get into our heart, even rules. We like to keep them on the outside. And we see the effect of that, right? We have this religious elite, and then we have these people that are cast out of religion. We have these people that are cast away from God, and we describe those people as poor in spirit. We describe those people as those who hunger and those who thirst. We describe those people as those who are meek or gentle. And those are people that are unblessable. Those are people that are pushed away. And Jesus comes in and says, these are the blessable. These are the blessed. Not because of what they've done, but because of who I am. And he gives them those things. And even if you continue on, you look at what Jesus gets at when he says, you've heard it said, do not murder. Well, I say, don't hate. And it's easy, relatively, not to murder somebody. But it's hard not to hate somebody, right? So Jesus wasn't making it easier for us. But what he's showing us and what he's teaching us is it's not about the outside, it is about the character within you. It is about what is within your heart. Because for some of us, we hate so much and we hate so easily, right? That if the opportunity came, perhaps we would murder, right? And that was the same thing with adultery. Said, you've heard it said, do not commit adultery, but I say that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully, right? And that's probably one we can connect more with. Because if the opportunity was there and you're already lusting, then adultery becomes just that much easier. And so Jesus is telling us, and he shows us all throughout the Sermon on the Mount, it's not all about what you're doing on the outside. It is about the character, the letting God change you from the inside out. And that will be shown in this fruit. Right? So looking at this metaphor, it helps us understand all of the Sermon on the Mount. But it also helps us understand a little bit after what he says there in chapter 7. So if you flip back in your Bible, you see this tree and the fruit. And he goes into probably what might be one of the, for some of us, scariest sets of verses that we can read. In chapter 7, verses 21 and following. Because following this analogy of the fruit and its, or the tree and its fruit, he says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Now, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't put the things that they're talking about, casting out demons and performing miracles, right? I wouldn't put those into the category of lawlessness. That's not where I would put those. But for some reason, Jesus does, right? So, because those seem like good things. Those are good actions, right? And even the person doing it here in this situation seems to think that they're good things. So what's the issue? The issue is not with the good action, right? But for some reason, the good action is not producing good fruit. And that's because the good action may even be coming from a bad tree. Because the character of the tree is what produces the fruit, not the action of the tree. So what we see here is that Jesus is saying it's not even what you do that's going to get you into the kingdom of heaven. But even the phrase, doing the will of my Father, has to be a character within each of us. It has to be that heart change that is within each of us that produces this fruit. Right? And Jesus uses this analogy as he gets out of Matthew. He uses this analogy in Luke chapter 6. Which is kind of Luke's account of the Sermon on the Mount. Whether Jesus, it's the same account, or if it's Luke accounting another time Jesus has taught similar things. But he gets in here and he talks about good trees and good fruit and bad trees and bad fruit. But we also see that in Matthew chapter 12, and this is in your bulletin, but if you want to move to chapter 12, verse 33, in chapter 12, we see Jesus actually talking to the Pharisees. In here, he says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for the tree is known by its fruit. You've brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an account in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. It is because our words reveal our character, right? That's what Jesus is saying here. The words that we say are what reveal the character that is within us. And some of us say, well, I mean, I could say some pretty nice things when I don't mean it, right? Or I've said some mean things. I didn't really mean it. I was just hungry, right? Or tired or frustrated, right? And that's what we do. We say things that we don't mean. My question is, where do the words come from then? And that's what Jesus would ask us. Because a lot of times we can hide words that are mean towards somebody else. We hold them in our mind. But for some reason, when we're hungry or we're tired or we're frustrated or we're somehow impatient of other things, perhaps you've been in a long car ride with your kids toward the mountains of northern New York, and words just come out that you don't expect, right? And I say, I didn't really mean that. What Jesus would say is that those words, that character is within you. Mr. Hammond, you just haven't been able to stop it by taking a nap or eating a cheeseburger, right? And so those words just happen to come out. But those spirit of anger or impatience is what's in us already. Just we hold it down until sometimes they come out. And that's what Jesus is saying, that even the words that come out of us are the fruit of what is produced in our inner character, right? And this analogy, again, is used by Jesus, but then Paul picks this up, right? Turn to Galatians chapter 5. This may be a little more familiar to you. Perhaps you had this as a memory verse at some point in your life. Galatians 5:22, right? And this is Paul talking to one of the churches that he's probably most frustrated with, the Galatian church. And if you were to read through this, you're going to see a side of Paul that you don't always see, say, in the book of Philippians. Philippians is a fantastic book. He's always talking about being nice and rejoicing over and over again. You read through Galatians, and he's not so excited about things. Right, but in right before Galatians chapter 5, verse 22, Paul is giving them a list of things that are done. And this list of things that they are doing, or the list of things that they're taking part in, is quite an ugly list. Right? He's talking about the deeds of the flesh, and I'm going to start before verse 22. But verse 19, it says, "The deeds of the flesh are evident. Immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these." These are deeds of the flesh. These are actions in which we take part of, right? But he compares these things to what he calls the fruit of the Spirit in verse 22. And he says, the fruit of the Spirit. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, and against such things there is no law. And we love this list, right? We get this put on a plaque and we put it in our house with a little grapevine next to it, right? The fruit of the Spirit. It's beautiful, right? The problem is when we read through this list of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, our mind automatically goes to, like it does with mine, not what does that character feel like, or what is that character within me, but we automatically start thinking about what is something loving I can do? How can I show patience? What does self-control look like in my life and outward action? We turn these inward characters of the fruit of the Spirit that are within us into action. Into actions that are on the outside. And we do that automatically. Why? Because we like to stay on the surface of things. We like to remain on the outside of things. And it's easy for us to make a new rule. Well, you have to be kind to your brother. You guys have to be patient while daddy's preaching. Right? You guys have to sit quietly. You have to do, and these are things that we like to control because then we can express the fruit of the Spirit. But Paul, if you look at the list of things that are on the deeds of the flesh, they are things that are done on the outside. And that's what happens even when some of this fruit is mangled and bruised and torn, is that we see the outward action come out like this. But Paul's talking about the fruit of the Spirit as something that starts on the inside. It is the character of somebody that has been changed by the Spirit. The action is actually not something that produces the fruit. Sometimes the actions that we're thinking about, because the actions you're thinking about are good things. But the action itself doesn't produce the fruit. The action itself is actually the fruit that is produced. When your character has been changed and you become loving on the inside, you will love others on the outside. When you are a patient person, it will come out in patient action, right? When the spirit of self-control has overtaken you, it will be evident in how you interact with others, how you act with others, how you act on social media and the like, right? Because that's really what we have to ask the question. Not what are the things that I can do, but we have to ask what is being produced by me. Because that's going to answer the question of how close I'm letting God take control of the things within me. How much I'm letting him mold my character or mold my heart. The answer is not going to be in what I do. Because obviously, from Matthew 7, we can do good things and still have an inward character that is horrible or corrupted. But what we must look at is what is being produced outside because of what we are letting God do inside of us. And so we have to ask the question, real hard questions, right? Questions sometimes we don't want to answer because it has to do with actions and interactions with other people. And we have to ask ourselves, what is being produced by my interactions with my family? What's being produced from the relationships that I have, whether they're friends or they're family members or even the person that I see every time I go to the grocery store? What is being produced by that interaction? Is there love being produced within me? Is there kindness that's even being produced within them? Is my interaction bringing them more joy? Is it bringing them more patience? Or goodness, or kindness? Are these things being produced in other people? Right? We have to ask that question. Because really what it comes down to is that anybody can do the good things. And you guys probably know some nice people that do good things that perhaps they have some questionable character. Or perhaps you know they're not even connected to Jesus. Right? They would have nothing to do with them. But they still do nice things, right? They head some nonprofit that takes care of people over here doing this, right? But the difference is that the world will not be totally changed. The world will not be totally saved by outward good actions. This world will only be changed by an inward change of character. And that's going to start with people that let God change them from the inside out. And then we will change and help God in his work, in this kingdom, in this world, help change people from the inside out. It's the only way this world's ever going to change. We can talk about how people are starving here, or they're suffering there, or there's pain here, or there's people that need stuff over there. And of course, we can do stuff. We can send people things, right? We can do that all the time. Actually, I went to a college with this young man, just finished running 100 marathons in 100 days. He ran from Santa Monica Pier, California, all the way to New York in Times Square in 100 days, right? He ran an average of 29 miles a day. He ran through 10 pairs of shoes, okay? I think he lost 3 or 4 toenails, something like this, right? But he ran this entire way. But the purpose of running that was to raise money through Active Water, raise money for clean drinking water in Ethiopia. Right? Even that, right? That action is the fruit of somebody that has been changed. Right? Anybody could have done that. Anybody could have done that. But if you hear him in the interviews, right? You hear him on the interviews, even talking to the New York Daily Post, right? By the end of it, he was in Runner's Magazine. He was in all these different, he got picked up by so many news media. But every time he talks about not the good things that we can do, but he says, God has blessed me with this. And it only makes sense to use it for this. He understands. And he is letting God work through him in this character, right? I throw up even thinking about running a marathon, right? It hurts, right? Just thinking about it. He ran 100 of them in 100 days. Ridiculous. So what we see on the outside isn't even the training that goes before it. And the heart that it takes to do that. He said the first time he went out running with his wife, they ran 1 mile around the park and he threw up, right? And he had to train and train and train for years to be able to do this. And it's amazing, right? But we see the fruit of what is happening, not just what he does, but how it affects other people. And then the people that see it, we see what is produced, not just by the outward action. The outward action is even the fruit of the inward character change that is in him. And that's the question we have to ask. What is being produced by what we do, by who we are? By our interactions, our reactions to things. Right? And the only way that we can have the change, again, is not by what we do. It is who we are connected to. In John 15, Jesus, again, this is the last time he uses the metaphor. And here, this is where I say he fulfills the metaphor, or he shows the end of the metaphor. In John 15, he says, I am the vine, you are the branches, right? He says, those that remain in me, that stay connected to me, that are part of me and what I'm doing, bear much fruit. And that is the only way that we are able to produce these good things, truly good things from the inside out, fruit that is not just beautiful, but that is comes from a good source. The only way we can do that is if we stay connected to Jesus, if we stay connected to his word that he speaks, if we stay true to his mission that he has called us to, and we talk with him, we pray with him, and we stay connected with who he is. Why don't you pray with me? Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much. Thank you so much that things don't depend on what I can do. Because I know if they were dependent on things that I would do, that things would just fall apart. But I thank you that you can work through me. And I pray that you continue to do so. That you change my heart anytime that there needs to be some kind of refinement, or there needs to be some kind of change or alteration, that you are the one that moves that, that changes that, that works through that, so that the actions that are produced from me, the things that are produced from me, the words that are produced out of me, are good and beautiful and loving and kind and patient. I pray that in each one of us here, that you change hearts and you work from us from the inside out, and that you see so much fruit produced up here, not just in Inlet, northern New York, but in this world. That you continue to work in your people, and you gather your people to yourself. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.